Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely no business trying to promote anything with that kind of music, except it has a charm and a pull that it might have been Louis Armstrong's first recording. You hear him riffing, and that hadn't been done before on the horns. You know, we have all that martial music and classical music, but here's somebody actually adding notes. Oh my goodness, it's a fabulous, good. Good day to you, everybody. Good day to you, brethren. It's a pleasure to have you here on Masonic Effects, the place where you can sit back, get comfortable. I hope you have something to sip on, something suitable to sip on. I have to say that. And are looking forward to an interesting commentary and always your thoughts on what's being said. We are, I think, I'm coming clearer. It's becoming a little clearer that we can't talk about masonry and do it justice until we talk about, you know, the various aspects, various facets of the order. So the audience here has expanded. We have listeners in Poland, and I want to welcome. I can't tell where you are in Poland, whether you're in Minsk or Warsaw or such. I don't know. So hello, wherever you're from. It's a pleasure to have you join us today, and to all our listeners from Norway. I have to say, I'd like to. I'll look a little more closely for it. You know, if you're in Oslo, I'm waving. Here's a shout out to all of our listeners from Asker or Sandvika, who are, you know, Lillestrøm. You know, great to have you here. We're all. It speaks to the universality of truly of what we are. But let's not lose track. We're such a curious bunch. Today's program is supported. I like to think that I support it with the work of people that can articulate, can explain ideas much in much more depth than I. And today I'm drawing on the American. A poet, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and I think if you're not a fan, if you're not an American, well, you know, join the rest of the world. Eh? Place is in a bit of a sorry state right now, But this is when Masons will need to, you know, perhaps have an opportunity to revisit our values and think about the connection beyond politics and beyond beyond the organizations of religion, and really pull together around our common interests and our common faiths. The humaneness of Masonry has always been something that we can be proud to display in however way we do it. So for all of those of you who are walking through life with that silent drumbeat in mind, as a Mason, we are to say that we're misunderstood is a bit ridiculous. Of course, we're misunderstood. Even for us, anybody that just starts to come forward with that muscular argument, they understand, or he or she understands the nature of Masonry. We might want to turn around and go in the other direction. There's a lot of things to be said about us, of course, that it's odd. I don't think it builds us up by talking about the way we're condemned or the misunderstandings of Masonry. I don't think that really does us a service at all. It's as if that's all we need to do, and we can shut off our thinking. We don't have to be analytical. Contemplative audience of Masonic Effects thinks otherwise. It's not enough to justify ourselves and to perhaps in some way find some noble effort in knowing that other places are ready to condemn. We can perhaps shake our head sadly and think that this is often the case that fear occurs when there's a lack of understanding. I'm just reading about the Chilcot papers coming down. An analysis in the UK of the UK support in the war on Iraq, and how mistaken the information wasn't. They acted with deceit. They acted without understanding very much about what was going on or what kind of secular tensions they were releasing with the with the intrusion. But who could argue? You know, somebody in uniform will quickly tell me otherwise. And over a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, explain more than what they say publicly. The wars are no answer. Never were, never will be, never can be. It's not our nature to settle our differences in battle. Our differences are settled with a common agreement, with compromise, with a common understanding that is hard to achieve when we're feeling homicidal. It's almost impossible. I'm drawn to the work of Emerson today, his work in 1841, Self-Reliance. It contains the most thorough statement of recurring themes, the need of each individual to avoid conformity and false consistency and follow their own instincts and ideas. Now we can think of this as it's fun. It's quite curious that, you know, 2017, we can look back at those words and think of applying our context to 1847. It was really done in 1841, so let me be honest with you. So it has, Emerson, not to be tedious about it, Emerson talked about three issues in mind. it's about all that I can balance in my head at any one time. He talked about the importance of self-reliance. You know, don't be led, don't be persuaded. Be influenced, be educated, and then for each one of us, there's an accountability when we make our own decisions. Now, this Emerson is clearly running a bit upstream here. The current is quite strong within the populist movement. Make those moves that are popular. Man, this is fueled by social media. It's not necessarily the area where sober thought and reflection occurs. We want those big numbers, those big volumes, which means sort of a correctness or rightness to the idea. Ridiculous, isn't it, when you think about it? But in his work, 1841, he was talking to us and just reminding us, this isn't the first poet, the first writer that's talked about this, but he's underlining it. And it has a, it, there's a, an element of need in that. As a whole, self-reliance as an ideal, even a virtue, and it contrasts with modes of dependency and conformity. It's the thinking, not whether, you know, do you want, do you think of masonry as a singularity, or do you see it, think of masonry and yourself in it as a composite of individuals that are there together because each individual component agrees. That's, I think, the synergy that we live with. We don't necessarily talk about it because it's not always necessary to be in our heads. But it is important, and I think we can agree with Emerson. And you can see the popularity with early in Masons in his day. You see the support they gave him. But he was talking about asserting the importance of thinking for oneself rather than meekly accepting other people's ideas. In fact, it has been said that when we begin to think for ourselves, then we have reached adulthood. Until then, we're like children, accepting somebody else's ideas. Gee, I'm not that smart, so it sounds smarter than me, so I better go along with it because, gee, I don't want to look stupid. Here's what he was reaching for. He wasn't, you know, yelling his argument across a bar stool at some of his pals at the end of the table, but it's like this. To believe that what is true in your private heart is true for all men, that, he says, is genius. Connection. So I'm forever awed by a slight comment by a very thoughtful fellow that I know. He said, everyone likes to feel special. For me, it was quite profound. And then more recently, a young woman talking to me about radical acceptance of self. Radical acceptance. You want to know who you are. Do you want to pretend that you're something that you're not, or accept your frailties, your limits, your capacities, and your abilities in a more candid and honest and valid way? The result of that is authenticity. The person who scorns personal intuition and instead chooses to rely on others' opinions lacks the creative power necessary for robust or bold individualism. Bold. I don't mean screaming it from the rooftops. It's an absence of conviction. It results not in different ideas, as the person expects. The absence of conviction. the absence that results in the acceptance of the same idea, secondhand thoughts that the person initially intuited. How do you become a follower? Well, if you think about it, you're not following very much. You already had the inclination. Pre-cortex and cortex, we know this. You know, we can look at that little, that big, complicated gray matter and that we're, you know, sort of the greatest mystery of our time. The last interesting thing worth exploring, I would say, is the human mind and brain. Well, we can get in our little machines and go to the bottom of the ocean, or we can get in our little machines and go up into the stars. But it's daunting, comparatively daunting, to explore the complexity of the human mind, texture, the geometry, the chemistry. What part do you not find stimulating? Well, my goodness, Emerson is doing this for us and with us. Again, we're constantly reminded. It's like we have this wonderful mentor working with each of us and working collectively with us. And the mentor is saying, don't worry, it's tough, it's hard, it's a lifestyle, this is a journey, you know, call it what you want. It's a challenge, and it goes on forever, and it goes on productively until you arrive at the goal. Is the goal to trust thyself? To know thyself? Who actually ever understands himself enough to come to those conclusions? Well, a thoughtful man does, I'll tell you. A thoughtful man, a contemplative man. The man that can sit down and say he's given it some thought, but he hasn't arrived at conclusions. That's a man that I can trust. The din. Masonry is turning down the volume on the din, on the crowd noise. It's walking through the marketplace with people hawking their wares, calling us over, explaining to us the great deal that they have to offer, attempting to motivate us to buy their products and to offer us their satisfaction in place of our own need. He's helping us to turn down the background noise and to walk through that marketplace with a different level of awareness. Look at the shopkeepers. Look at the shoppers huddled together, looking at the goods, picking things up, weighing them, looking at them, moving on, chattering, laughing, standing in the middle because they've seen friends they haven't seen for so long, just absolutely frozen. Not because they're thinking about me and my need to go nowhere for no reason and get there quickly, or that I'm all walking around with that sense of ridiculous self-importance. Yeah. But to be able to move like that molecule, you know, when I think about this, it's kind of startling. It's kind of funny when I think that physics taught us that there's more space than there is matter. I sit here and I look at things. I'm looking at my pencil and I'm thinking, I don't see the space. I don't see the space between the molecules. I see the yellow coating on it and then the rubber on the end and the lead in the. But the truth be known, if we're small enough, you know, there's little neutrinos. I'm sitting here, you're sitting there, and they're coming from eventually the center of the sun seven, 8 years ago. And how many years does it take? Like 6.9 years to reach the surface of the sun. And then they are penetrating us continuously. And the evidence, you can see it in your own house. If you have a television screen, turn to a channel that has that so-called snow neutrinos. So we're bombarded. And all they're doing is they're not tearing me apart. They're not tearing you apart. They're moving in between the spaces. How do you talk about it? I love the word nano, but what's beyond that, you know? Can you imagine if we put ourselves in the position of being able to move in between the molecules and penetrate, and with that, draw on our mind to help us to understand what we're doing and what we're seeing? Oh, the glory of such a period of reflection. Sit back here. This will help. This is drawn on music done by Thelonious Monk, who some of us think was close to a prophet, a jazz musician, of course. This is by a Danish trio, Esbjørn Svendsen's trio, and this is called Bemsha Swing. Check it out. Great bass line. Just... Yeah. We'll be right back. Thank you. sort of adds a different meaning to the term classic, doesn't it? Just So if you're into speaking in musical tongues, this is jazz is the ultimate. It was the imagination of Black culture and that syncopation from Americans. But it was the release of a language, and of course, the release of that language led to a discovery that there were people all over the globe that understood at once. It's like that division between what we know and what we understand. Here, I want to talk to you today about the canary in a Masonic coal mine. Well, there seems to be a lot of metaphoric coal mines in the news these days. It would be easy for the populist movement to teeter out of control, as it often does historically, and then it's going to be left to men of conscience, thoughtful men, to create a peace and be able to move on. We've forgotten lately that the European Union just celebrated its 60th anniversary. At the time of its inception, there was a great feeling that it was worthwhile to surrender our strong feelings of nationalism, not to be absorbed, but to surrender nationalism, not our cultures, and for the sake of creating commerce that would lead to give us more reason to maintain the peace and a process of resolving conflict, not suggesting that differences of opinion would never occur. That's really naive. No, it was giving processes that everybody could agree on at the onset. Well, you really do appreciate something when you feel the need and that need is fulfilled. I come second generation after the first generation after the war. So the people that raised me were keenly aware of the need for peace and harmony. Yeah, there were still a few outliers that felt they couldn't get the taste of blood out of their mouth. And they've always been there. Maybe they're the camp followers whose minds were twisted somehow by the clamor of the battlefield. But it took sober minds to map out a course of peace. Now, where those mappings failed, we can trace it back to the First World War. Where they failed, those gaps are being revisited on us, and so these process being bounced around like this is a process of constant refinement. You can be short, so we can be short-sighted and press our nose up against the glass and think that it's a here we go again world, or we can pull back and take a breath and realize that we do progress, that we do, in spite of our own inclinations, we do get it right. We, not one, we do understand. Secular violence, well, we've all been there and done that. Battles of brother against brother and father against son, been there and done that. Now, we're looking at an innovation, a strengthening of the minority position. not always sure how to listen to them, to that voice, or what to do with it, but we're listening. And the greatest gap, the most obvious gap, the voice of women is coming to the fore. Now, you historians out there will know that at different points in our past, women played predominant roles. And then for some interesting reason that I won't get into today, there was subjugation. Inevitably, that subjugation will end because the natural order, not my order or your order, the natural order is harmony, common understanding. Right now, we still don't have it. We're all popping in on the scene. We're seeing, we come upon something that requires an urgent decision, and we still have divergencies around the room. We still, and maybe this is utopian, haven't come to the point where we can all be understanding the situation in a similar way enough that we can anticipate the moves happening around us. Not the clamor for so-called leader. Generals never won a battle. Not that I'm uppity, it's just I pay attention to what old soldiers have taught us. Hell. To think that there are forces and powers around us that are immutable, if you think that way, remember what humbled Napoleon's army. Remember. It was the Russian winter. Now, how do you sort that one out? It's part of our history. Yeah? So I wanted to talk about the canary in the Masonic coal mine. Early indicators, yeah. Our collective is a multifaceted celebration of all that is best of humanity. You okay with that? It's not an inalienable right. Dilettantes among us will pause over this, as will the general public. Why do we sustain a gender-specific platform? Closed. What is the purpose and value of participation in organizations that existed in the time of the guilds, founded on ideas of ancient philosophy and culture? What's the point? Simple enough question. Not an accusation thrown at you. Don't mean to put you on the spot. Just a thought. What's the point? Must be a point. It's the absence of answer. The canary in our coal mine. Is that one of the greatest? Is that the Russian winter? That we don't offer, don't create opportunity for a thoughtful conversation about these types of things. Well, unless, of course, you consider Masonic effects and the fact that this whole process wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago, meaning reaching out to you and you reaching back has allowed us different perspectives. Why? There's good reasons, and it's not the subjugation. It's not subjugation. We're not, unless you're just a dyed-in-the-wool neo-colonialist, bless your heart, we have nothing in common. I like souvenirs, so punish me. I like the souvenir of the royal family. How they got there, not a big fan. But I like the pomp and circumstance and the the beautiful carriages and the gravitas. And the fact that as if there's some form of accountability. We want to do our best for and put on our best show when the monarch is around. I think that's okay. I think that's another reason to sweep the streets and to press my pants. Now, if I get into the dogma of history and the utter tragedy of colonialism, the only thing I could say would make me sound completely stupid and insensitive. Why do that? It's not popular to try and find balance in something that led to so many complications. We still haven't sorted them all out. What was the reason for colonialism? Was it that about? Was it about economics? Is it not about economics? Was it about power and greed? I don't want to think so. Was that wrapped up in, you know, somebody claiming to have discovered lands and conquering people that already lived there, just murdering people that had their own way of life? That wasn't discovery. It's called murder. Oh, history will be rewritten. Yeah. And it will become a little more accurate. You know, a little too soon for us to, if we're all chafing about these kind of conversations, a little too soon. Can't really handle that much honesty in the room at one time. But we learn. We move on. We learn from our mistakes, yeah? Quartet. This is from a 1956 album. Poof. Check it out. Thank you. thank you, Denmark. Ooh, very cool. Very cool. Here. John, always little points of history seem to keep us focused in a way. I keep thinking about the center point or the denominator in my world equation is around the development of thought. Now, I don't know how to access the history from a Russian perspective or from a Chinese perspective or from an African perspective. I don't know how. It's just not that I'm negating them. I just don't know how to access that information. So that will be on my list of my bucket list, things to do, things to discover. The denominator for me is around, you know, Eastern Europe, and British Britain being the hub, because that's sort of the central point of history. And from there, there's offshoots of what went on up in the German provinces and the principalities, the principalities in Italy coming together, and the history of the central government that's still dragged out ignominiously and wrongly by Canadian politicians here. And where you have any talk about electoral reform, just ridiculous, just a childish, erasure of thousands of years of Italian history, and Roman history. It's like, oh my goodness. So, really, we don't all start today. We all come from a very complicated history, our own history, our nuanced history. So if you and I need to understand one another, then we need to be able to understand and appreciate the effects of that great conversation that led to us. What old debts are there in our, what old skeletons are in our closet? Well, I come from a Scottish background. We not only have skeletons, we drag them out. We make sure that we're looking eye to eye, or whatever you look, what do you call it when you're looking at a skull? There's no shame in this. This is like resolution. This is a resolute bunch. This isn't the group that you want to attempt to intimidate. That's just not part of the narrative, huh? But I'm talking about those influences as common denominators. Things like, well, I'll give you an example. It's things like the Reformation. And I think there's an effect on us, on Masonic thought around the world. It's not something commonly understood. But today I want to just do that as a sort of a setup for this other phenomena, the Counter-Reformation. And, of course, it's all failed in Protestant and secular as Protestant Catholic language, because that was the balance. We don't have to look just at, you know, surprised at Sunni and Shiite secularism. We don't. Come on now. We could just murder ourselves until to a standstill. 100 years war. Just have at it until you want to, but you just can't. Have we resolved anything? No idea. The Reformation, this is around, this is early 16th century, and it was a schism, and it was initiated by none other than the German thinker Martin Luther, and continued on by John Calvin, the Calvinist movement, and Protestant reformers. It's considered to have begun with the publication of the 95 Theses in 1517, and went on to the 30 Years' War, and it ended with the Peace of Westphalia in 1648. It's true. Well, that's what's said, yeah. Luther is widely acknowledged to have started the Reformation from his work, and he began criticizing the sale of there was the big corporation with the mothership was doing some shady things, and it was like, what does this have to do? The claims that purgatory, well, the Holy See had authority over the purgatory, really? And he said, you've stretched it a little bit too far, boys. So he wrote it down. He said, there's a lot of people around that think like I do. Well, what are you guys doing? And you're making money selling indulgence. Well, you can be a scoundrel, and then we'll just give you an indulgence, and that's your get-out-of-jail-free card. No, I'm oversimplifying. Can you imagine? Hugely oversimplifying things that were far more complicated, but it's not my place to get into the weeds, as they say. I like that. Oh, she said, no, this is wrong. So that's the source of the 95 theses, ideas. Huh? And it sparked a movement inside Germany. It was very diversified, And it led to, and here's where, remember, Gutenberg's printing press, it provided the means to distribute this information in the vernacular. It wasn't in Latin, it was in the vernacular. The largest groups were Lutherans and Calvinists, and Lutheran church is founded mostly in Germany and the Baltics and Scandinavia, and the Reformed ones were founded in Switzerland and Hungary and France and Scotland, yeah. So there's a new movement influenced by the Church of England decisively after 1547. What's it? Edward VI? Yeah. The Church of England has been made independent, had been made under Henry VIII just a little bit before in 1530s. But all of that rolled out, and then the Roman Catholic Church responded with a counter-reformation. You'll hear this in your school textbooks, the Council of Trent. And then it became battling Protestantism, back and forth. This was, startling. This is something that Masonry should pay attention to. This is where around the period where the Jesuits, the Order of the Jesuits were formed. This is like this think tank, the scholars. We have the first Jesuit Pope right now. This is a danger to all the despots and the power brokers. You get somebody that's an independent thinker and bright, supported by a very, very well-schooled group of people. Look out there. Of course, there's going to be change. So all of that, does that have a bearing? I put that to you. It's not for me. You're not sheep. Sort of a bearing on the movement toward what we have today in Masonry. I say that was a bit of a cop out, wasn't it? What we have today. You fill in the blank yourself, because I don't want to argue. I want to sit down over a glass of good wine and talk to you about that. What in the world? But that would be a conversation that will go on for a great long time so that we understand one another. But yeah, I think in a lot of ways that was the backdrop for that to strengthen the principles of Masonry, this notion of universality. Can I imagine that bearing witness to Reformation period and the conflict and Counter-Reformation where people like me and my clan would switch from one religion to the other because we didn't want to die. Oh, get down off your high horse. Don't be acting so damn pompous. I should have died for my beliefs. Get lost. Because you wait around long enough and the next monarch would come in and you'd be switched back. So it all became very transient, huh? Vaporous, conditional. What do we believe in? We believe in survival. And when you're hungry and cold, survival is pretty damn important. I dare say there's nobody that would make that argument to a man. Oh, yeah, we have martyrs. Yep. But I'm thinking about the martyrs' families' children. You know, survival of the species. Survival of the clan. Decisions made on the spot for whatever reason. I'm in there working in my murky garden, trying to keep enough food on the table so we don't starve. And a bunch of troops come in and say, right, we've got a new monarch. Who are you loyal to? So we look around and, hey, Sean, what is he? Is he Catholic or Protestant? All right, we're Catholic today. Always have been. He's our boy. Or, no, we're Protestant now. You know, oh, we give up those sinful ways. We're Protestant now. Did I get it right, Seamus? No. Yeah, I did. Yeah, Cyril, what do you think? Is that, you know, who's coming down the lane now? Well, be careful because these are anti-papists. Okay, I'm anti-papist. I don't mean to sound ridiculous about it, but I'm allowed to compress history, just like you are. And does it matter? Well, the only thing I can think of is it better damn well matter. I'm really going to have to do some work and understand more about what was going on in Scandinavia. It's not enough for me to think, oh, well, there's nothing between Vikings and some really beautiful jazz and a culture and the contentment and the symmetry of remarkable cultures. Remarkable. There's just a little bit of a gap in there, gentlemen. We'd like to fill that in a bit. Maybe if any of you are out there, you can write to me at masoniceffects@gmail.com. Tell me, you know, give me some references so we can get into it. Not that I become an expert just because I read a book. It's like you have to sit down and think about it. So, does it matter? Did it matter? Here we go again. I think here we go again is likely enough of a catalyst that would instill us all to try and find an alternative. What's the alternative? Well, to examine the whole point. We're battling for what? For nothing. Where is it getting us? Nowhere. And look at the price we pay. No, it's not about whether we dominate, whether we win. It's how it defines us in history. Yeah. So, do we go in and kill 147,000 civilians because we, oops, made a mistake about weapons of mass destruction? Oops. Well, we thought that, you know, I don't know. I don't know about you, but I think those that many people have died in earnest. They weren't dying for an ideal. They were dying in earnest. They were killed for what? And we have the apologists and the cover-ups of a murderous lot. Not the first time armies have been done. But you know what's strange is that all of this analysis isn't taking decades or a century to perform. It's being done within years of the events. If you think that that's not going to have an effect on people enlisting, you'd be, give your head a shake. Sweden just brought back conscription because it wasn't getting enough volunteers from young people. So what does it need? What do they need? 45,000? Correct me here. I'm guessing a bit there. Masonry was fueled by reason, not bigotry and superstition. We can look at everybody and say, oh well, you know, because of their that faith, you know, there must be something bloody wrong with them. It's different than saying I've never heard of that. What's that about? That's different, or I don't understand that, or hey, that's going to take me a while to get my head around that. And like anybody else, you get enough people afraid, and they're going to say and do, and without accountability. I think our salvation, in a way, is that we're accountable to ourselves, to our Creator, and to one another. And then in that order, here we were taught, I was taught that we have priorities that we have to keep in mind. But the people that taught me believed in autocracies. We're good autocrats. This came first, this came second, this came third. They were altogether ready to tell me my Masonic priorities. And then, my goodness, the discovery and all of this material was the need. It wasn't a priority. It was a list of priorities. It was a balance, a task to balance. How do you balance your responsibilities in life? Well, I'd say you do it very carefully. So the canary in the coal mine, Yeah, but did you notice how Masons have taken the canary out of the coal mine out into the fresh air and sunshine? That's on us, boys. That's our gig. That's what we did. Yeah, there's different gases and it's dangerous. And once upon a time, we needed to go down into the earth and mine that. Now, not so much. Now we have some daunting tasks. How are we going to figure out a way of minimizing the negative impact of technology? Luddites, go back to sleep. We're not stopping this one. Otherwise, we would have never had the development, we would never have had great trains and electricity. And we wouldn't. We can't stop it. We need to be able to figure out how to minimize the effect, the backdraft, the displacement. We'll get there. We will. I have great faith in you. This is just a beautiful piece of music. And welcome to our newest group of listeners from Poland. It's a pleasure. All I can say in Polish are curse words that I was taught by when I was a young man by some Polish people who are living in, taught me how to play drak and how to swear when the game didn't go the way it was supposed to. So I can't even greet you without knowing. But sit back and we'll end our show with the Jerzy Melian Quartet. This is from 2004. Softly, as is a morning sunrise. Very cool. It's been a pleasure having you here with us again today. I look forward to being with you again. We have to talk about the synergies and the vitality that is Freemasonry. And remember, you're listening to somebody. Be concerned. You're listening to somebody that has a belief that Freemasonry is the best parts of humanity. The ideas. Cheers.